You're listening to Resolution Radio. 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 ResolutionRDO.com.
Renegade Broadcasting. Hard-hitting talk radio.
Welcome to the Solar Storm. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, coming to you September 6, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me here at RenegadeBroadcasting.com. Please check out the other shows we've got on this network, including Sinead's recent show on RFK Jr. being a complete kosher shill. Also, check out RenegadeTribune.com, where we've got a lot of content going up all the time. Also, there's HeathenHerbs.com, where you can buy a lot of products that I really know you'll appreciate. There's a lot going on this week, a lot to cover, but first I wanted to start out with this personal story of mine. Now, as you all know, a lot of products that you buy in your daily life are now restricted to you, where you will have to put on a mask if you want to get them. It is part of the whole social credit system going on. If you're engaging in pro-social behaviors with your anti-social distancing and your mask wearing, then you will be able to get these products that you'll need. You'll be able to go into this store and that store and this restaurant. But if you don't, then you're going to have to be acting like I do and going and finding alternatives. And sometimes this is a good thing. Well, one of the ways that we've been able to circumvent the whole mask wearing is by ordering a lot of products online. Now, one of the sites that I ordered from, it's based out of somewhere in the Northwest. And they'll ship to you, but it'll cost a little bit more. So I was buying some stuff like bulk rice, some cheesecloth, some maple syrup, some gluten, some other stuff. And I got it shipped to us, but here's the thing. If you get it shipped to your house, it costs a lot more. But if you get it shipped to a somewhat local parking lot, and then you go meet the truck there and help unload the different orders into people's cars, because they come once a month, and a bunch of people will go there, and they'll all get their orders at the same time, and it costs you, I don't know, $15-$20 less. I chose that option. You know, I like to save some money. So this was just this past week. I went there. It was for 11 a.m. time when we're supposed to meet the truck. Now, beforehand, they had sent out an email saying, oh, meet your truck delivery driver. So you can find out who was delivering these supplies. And I clicked on it. Oh, the guy's from Trinidad. So a black truck delivery driver. Okay, you know, as long as he shows up on time. But here's the thing. He didn't show up on time. He showed up using black people time. And actually, it wasn't just him. There was another guy in the truck too, another black guy, and I, you know, who helps unload stuff. And they showed up about an hour late. So I'm sitting there in the parking lot waiting for an hour. Now, it wasn't just me waiting for an hour. It was a bunch of other people, a bunch of other cars. But in those cars, sometimes it was couples. Sometimes it was whole families. And my air conditioning does not work very well when the car is not moving. So I was getting sweaty. Now, some people are just standing outside their cars waiting. You know, there's this guy looking like an idiot standing with his mask on in the hot sun for an hour. Why the hell are you wearing that mask, you idiot? Most people did not have their masks on. So it seems like perhaps some of these people were ordering from this service for the same reason that I was. But when you add it all together, I don't know, maybe there were 60 people there all together. This guy wasted 60 hours worth of people's lives just by being late. And it's not like we got a message saying, oh, the truck is running late, you could come a little bit later. People have busy schedules. People have things to do. We can't just sit around waiting for an hour because these black guys couldn't get there on time. Oh, but I'm just not being culturally sensitive. I am not understanding that people view time in different ways. It's not just this rigid white construction of time that we all need to abide by because white people came up with these clocks and everything. They'll get there when they get there. Seriously, this is the way that people are talking these days with all of the cultural Marxism and the critical race theory and all of that. They are making it seem like expecting people of color to arrive on time is racist. When civilization, the modern world cannot function unless people are punctual. It shows a great deal of respect. It shows that you care about and value other people and their time. So this leads me to the first story I wanted to get to here tonight. This is from Campus Reform. College director: every white person in this country is racist. All right. Pacific University staff psychologist Dr. Shirley Lee is hosting a weekly webinar series called Rising from the Margins. Lee said that the platform is dedicated to those who have been perceived as inferior or less worthy due to their background. In episode 10, The Intersection of Race, Class, and Disability, Lee spoke with the director of accessible education at Willamette University, Sue Minder. During that episode, uploaded to the university's official YouTube channel on July 22nd, Minder said, "Every white person in this country is racist because they benefit from the structure of racism." When asked to confront privileges, she said that most people usually respond with, "I'm not racist, I would never use a racial slur." "I think the first step is we get over it," said Minder of that reaction. "Stop trying to pretend that we don't have privileges of some sort, because most of us do have unearned advantages," said Minder. In episode 11, White Supremacy Work Culture, Lay talked about the idea that whiteness is the supreme standard by which all peoples of culture are measured. "It is important for us, particularly racialized peoples," racialized peoples, that's interesting, "to understand how every single day of our existence is influenced and infiltrated by white supremacy ideals," said Lay. She went on to list three indicators of white supremacy culture. They are perfectionism, which she called the need to get things done right all the time; the sense of urgency, which she called the idea that things should have been done yesterday; and quantity over quality, which she said is only focusing on parts of your life that are directed towards producing measurable goals. Guys, this is white supremacy. Needing to get things done right. Expecting that things get done right. Jeez. You gotta take white supremacy out of the workplace so that you don't care if things get done right. You don't have a sense of urgency. You don't care. It could get done tomorrow. "Oh, those white guys over there thinking things should have been done yesterday because that's when the deadline was." Get rid of that idea. Quantity over quality. That's not even true. White people don't put quantity over quality. Think about all of the Africans with their many, 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 many children. Are they really caring about putting quality over quantity? No, it's all about quantity. And it's all about the gives me that. Especially when they get here to America where they get the welfare checks. Oh yeah, bring them all, bring everybody up, and then have some more children. The more the better. The more the merrier, right? Give me some of that government cheddar. But only focusing on parts of your life that are directed towards producing measurable goals, is that really wrong? Wanting to be goal-oriented? It's just so stupid. The webinar currently has more than a dozen episodes. Some other available webinar episodes include racial microaggressions, the POC label, and deconstructing the model minority stereotype. All right, that sounds just absolutely delightful. Amazing. Now I'm going to turn to a story from an outlet I obviously do not endorse, which is the National Review. This is from 2017. But this goes to further my point that time itself and the keeping of time is very much racist. Clemson diversity training. Expecting people to arrive on time is culturally insensitive. In the United States, it's just a fact that you're supposed to arrive on time to your appointments. According to materials from a diversity training course at Clemson University, it's culturally insensitive to expect people to show up on time because time may be considered fluid, just like gender, guys, in some cultures. Clemson's Diversity Benefits for Higher Education initiative, which costs the school more than $25,000, according to Campus Reform, presents its participants with slides featuring hypothetical scenarios and asks them to select the correct, culturally sensitive action from a list of options. Alejandro scheduled a 9 a.m. meeting with two groups of visiting professors and students from other countries, one of the scenarios states. When he arrived, he found that the first group had been waiting for 15 minutes. The second group arrived at 9:10 and wanted to socialize first, it continues. What should Alejandro do? The slide then lists three options. 1. Politely ask the second group to apologize. 2. Explain, in our country, 9 a.m. means 9 a.m. 3. As the meeting organizer, he should recognize cultural differences that may impact the meeting and adjust accordingly. The correct answer, according to the slide, is option 3. Time may be considered precise or fluid depending on the culture, the slide explains. For Alejandro to bring three cultures together, he must start from a place of respect. Understanding and his cultural perspective regarding time is neither more nor less valid than any other. Sorry, but nope. In the United States, it's just a fact that you're supposed to arrive to your appointments on time. If you're late, then you're supposed to apologize, or else people are going to think that you're an inconsiderate jerk. Like it or not, that's objectively true, and pretending that it isn't true isn't going to change that. Yo, you gotta recognize black people time. Show up half hour late. Shouldn't be any repercussions. Why, you fire me? You racist? You don't respect my cultural differences? The truth is that picking the sensitive option in this hypothetical scenario really doesn't do any good at all, including to the people who were late. Allowing the people in the second group not to only be late, but also to continue to chat and socialize among themselves when they had already kept the other people waiting might seem like a nice, forgiving thing to do, but it's really only going to make their lives harder in the long run. Now, I'm not saying you should say something unnecessarily rude, but allowing them to think there was nothing wrong with what they did will make them think that's okay to do it in the future. And it really isn't. If one of them goes on to, say, arrive 10 minutes late for a job interview and decides not to even apologize, then that person probably isn't going to get the job. That's racism and discrimination. Not acceptable. There could be real, objective effects to continuing this kind of behavior that go far, far beyond a feeling a little embarrassed for 2 seconds. Professors are very busy people, and telling them that they don't have the right to demand punctuality is absurd. It's a sign of respect. It shows that you take the other person's time seriously, and everyone has the right to demand that. Yes, we do. We really do. As if we didn't have enough problems with our society functioning correctly. Now you're just telling people that they don't have to even keep track of time. They can just show up whenever they want to because it's their culture. That's really going to help black people and all sorts of other people of color, racialized people, succeed. Sure, yeah. That's going to deal with the issues of economic inequality, as Jeff Bezos has talked about, the guy who makes billions in an hour or so. Yeah, that guy's the one who should lecture us on income inequality as he pays people slave wages and makes them ask to go use the bathroom. It's just ridiculous. All right, so there was this article that was put out by Hucklebuck411 on the Tribune called Filthy White Savages, Having Dogs as Pets is Now Considered to Be Racist. You can go check that one out. But what I found interesting was some of the comments that were left. Now, having dogs is racist for white people, but all these other things are considered racist, too. Somebody left in the comments a list of things, articles that are published like this every single week. And he says, it reminds me of the run-up to the Trump campaign when he became president in 2016, which was the same time BLM and Antifa were protesting in Cleveland. So we got this whole big barrage of anti-white articles that just surges right around election time. Some other examples of insane headlines in recent months. How Hollywood's Alien and Predator movies reinforce anti-black racism. Yeah, that the Alien is like a big black phallus in some ways. And Predator, he's got dreadlocks, yes. Is the vegan movement ready to reckon with racism? Dear white vegans, stop appropriating food. Oh, I saw one about Adele. You know, they were all mad at her for fat shaming because she got skinny. She used to be this fat icon. But now she was in trouble because she went to this parade with, I guess, Jamaican hairstyle. But it was, you know, supposed to be celebrating that culture or something. I think it was the Notting Hill Parade. Whatever, they were just all pissed off that she was appropriating black hairstyle. Okay, we should yell at every single black woman who wears a weave or straightens their hair or dyes it blonde. How about that? Stop appropriating white hair. Just retarded. Why are so many robots white? Study shows there's a racial bias, because people would be so much more scared of them if they were black robots. And maybe that has something to do with racial bias, or maybe that's just how we're hardwired. Thomas the Imperialist Tank Engine. It's about a kid's cartoon involving a talking tank engine. That's racist, too. Even though they recently had a bunch of other characters from different cultures, you know, the slanty-eyed Asian, probably some other ones that talk with different accents to make it more inclusive. Probably a Muslim one or a Sikh one with the head wrapping on top of the tank engine. I don't know, but I saw something about that. Interior design has a race problem, and it needs to be addressed. Students who look away could be racist, Oxford says. Reckoning with the racist past of bird names. Oh my god. Clemson University. Expecting people to show up on time is racist. That's the one I just went over. Cow's milk has long been a symbol used by white supremacists. Oxford Union votes to replace clapping with silent jazz hands. Okay. Is math racist? New course outlines prompt conversations about identity, race in Seattle classrooms. Yeah, Seattle. That's what they need to be discussing. Is math racist? While their whole city, you know, has been full of rioting along with Portland and other places. Let's just talk about if math is actually racist. Remember that Jewess I wrote an article about not too long ago who said that saying that 2 plus 2 equals 4 is racist white supremacy. The racist history of soap. Wow. Colgate to review historically racist toothpaste brand Darlie. The unbearable whiteness of hiking and how to solve it. The knitting community is reckoning with racism. The unbearable whiteness of cycling. Black people choose not to do these things. They could be hiking. They could be cycling. They could be doing any of these. They could be using soap. They choose not to. The craft beer industry has a diversity problem. That's because they'd rather turn to the cheap booze. Get some Colt 40 or whatever. Some Mickey's. Do they drink Mickey's? I don't know. The unintentional racism found in traffic signals. What? Jogging has always excluded black people. That's because the only time they're jogging is when they're trying to run away with stolen goods. Oh, those joggers. I'm just kidding. Actually, in this town, there was recently a story about a black guy who was out going for a jog. He just had his wife gave birth to a baby, you know, a couple days prior. His first time he's able to get out of the house and get some exercise in. So as he was running down the street, they said it was in a predominantly white neighborhood, but those things don't exist in my area. They just don't. So when they say predominantly white, they might mean majority white. You know, over 50% of the people on the street were white. But they're trying to make it seem like he just has a bunch of racist neighbors who called the cops on him. So the cops came, and it turns out that somebody that fit his description had recently stolen something out of a shed in the neighborhood. And it was a pretty close description. Black guy wearing a white tank top, and that fit the bill. Yeah, he was in running shoes, the other guy was in flip-flops, but people don't always get their descriptions right. So the cops were actually very polite, very courteous, and let him go after 15 minutes of just talking to him on the street. They might have handcuffed him, but they took them right off. And he was just saying, oh, I was polite because I didn't want to get shot. You know, I see all these videos, people getting shot. Instead of being mad at the cops for going and finding somebody who fit the description of the suspect, you should be mad at your fellow black people for committing these crimes and getting you to be detained like that. You know, it's not our fault that black people are committing all these crimes. That's why you're racially profiled, if you ever are. It's because the 13% of the population, and it's even smaller because most of it's black males, young black males, commit such a large percentage of the murders in this country. 13% of the population committing 50% of the murders in America. Oh, but we need to... Black Lives Matter, they're so unfairly targeted by the police. How about all of the people, the innocent victims who are targeted by blacks? How about that? Why don't we ever talk about that? I could go on and on, the commenter says, but you get the idea. These kinds of posts are everywhere right now and seems to have increased since the George Floyd incident. It would be interesting to compile a list of all these articles and calculate what percentage of the reporters belong to the tribe. Indeed. I think it was Hucklebuck who responded. Good job compiling that list. Here are a few more articles linking racism with dogs. Can dogs be racist? The colonial legacies of racialized dogs in Kenya and Zambia. The racist roots of the dog whistle. Can dogs be racist? Like children, dogs may pick up prejudices from their caretakers. Why is my dog racist, and how can I fix it? Is your dog racist, or is it really you? Listen, if dogs are racist, it's probably for good reason. They usually can be a pretty good judge of character and of threats. So if your dog's barking at a black person, it's probably a good idea not to trust that black person. And in general, around blacks, never relax, that is the old saying. Now let's turn to an article that I found on the BBC. This one is titled Royal Institution Lecture. Science was racist, says first black lecture host. A professor who will be the first black person to host a lecture series in 200 years said science historically has been racist, but times are changing. Professor Chris Jackson will deliver a Royal Institution Christmas lecture this year, which will be shown on BBC 4. The geologist from Derby said he feels he is representing the working class as well as the black community and wants people to be proud of him. The Royal Institute said that having a black scientist host was overdue. The Christmas science lectures were started by Michael Faraday in 1825 and are now broadcast on television annually. In 2015, Kevin Fong presented a lecture, but until then, they had been hosted by white scientists. Professor Jackson, who will present alongside Dr. Helen Zhursky and Dr. Tara Shine, I'm guessing Jewish, told the BBC, there have clearly been other qualified black people to give this lecture in the last 200 years. I think institutions and people have been very poor at recognizing the contributions of black scientists as they have equally women scientists. Times are changing now, so there is increasing recognition that there have been significant contributions made by those groups of people. Professor Jackson, who works in the Faculty of Engineering at Imperial College London, said his lecture will be about how rocks are a very rich record of how climate has changed over millions of years. I hope he talks about Cheddar Man, too. He said it was an absolutely huge honor to be chosen. A spokesman from the RI said, while we can't change the past, we can learn from it. That's why we are doing as much as we can to bring greater diversity. Our Christmas lecturers are always experts in their scientific discipline and always have evidence of their past commitment to public engagement. So it's great when they're also from more diverse backgrounds. It's going to be a riveting lecture on rocks. Looking forward to hearing about that. Now let's turn to a story a lot of people were talking about this past week. And that would be Joe Biden's claim that a black man invented the light bulb. Yep. He was up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, where there has been a lot of rioting, looting, and just general destruction after a black criminal was supposedly shot by the police as he was resisting arrest and going for his gun. And this shooting of Jacob Blake caused the NBA to call off some of their games and all these people all over the country to start kvetching, and then some other rioting, and oh yeah, it's been great. Black Lives Matter, yo. So Biden was up there in Kenosha, and he was giving this speech, and he said, "Why in God's name don't we teach history in history classes? A black man invented the light bulb, not a white guy named Edison, okay?" So let's just listen in here to good old Joe Biden.
"Why in God's name don't we teach history in history classes? A black man invented the light bulb, not a white guy named Edison. Okay? There's so much. Did anybody know before what's recently happened? That Black Wall Street in Oklahoma was burned to the ground? Anybody know these things? We act because we don't teach them. We got to give people facts. Teach them what's out there."
Speaking of teaching real history, since the Tulsa massacre has been brought up so many damn times, I feel like it's one more opportunity to correct the record and state that that all started because a black criminal had assaulted a white woman, I believe it was, and then when the black people assumed that this black guy had been lynched, and he had not been, they were gathered outside the courtroom. I forget the exact story. But you know who fired first? It was black people, and they killed a number of white people. And that's what caused the white people to start getting a little bit angry. And that seems to be the case most of the time. It's blacks killing whites, and then they're playing the victim. Sure, white people might have taken their anger out on some people that might not have been there to that actually fired the shots. But who started it? It was black criminality that started this. Black murderous rage that started the Tulsa race riot. So let's get the history right there. Even the Wikipedia entry on the Tulsa race riots, or the Tulsa massacre, as it is called, actually does a decent job of summing it up. So let me just read briefly here from this. "The massacre began during the Memorial Day weekend after 19-year-old Dick Rowland, a black shoeshiner, was accused of assaulting Sarah Page, the 17-year-old white elevator operator of the nearby Drexel building. He was taken into custody. After the arrest, rumors spread through the city that Dick Rowland was to be lynched." Nothing had happened to him. "Oh, yo, they're gonna lynch that black boy." "Upon hearing the reports that a mob of hundreds of white men had gathered around the jail where Dick Rowland was being kept, a group of 75 black men, some of whom were armed, arrived at the jail with the intention of helping to ensure Dick Rowland would not be lynched. The sheriff persuaded the group of black men to leave the jail, assuring them that he had the situation under control. As the group of black men was leaving the premises, complying with the sheriff's request, a member of the mob of white men attempted to disarm one of the black men." I think they added this recently. "A shot was fired, and then, according to the reports of the sheriff, all hell broke loose. At the end of the firefight, 12 people were killed, 10 white and 2 black." So the black people fired on the whites. Supposedly a white guy had attempted to disarm a black man. Just think about what happened in Kenosha, by the way, where supposedly Kyle Rittenhouse was attempted to be disarmed by a guy hitting him in the head with a skateboard, and another guy with a pistol in his hand, with a paramedic hat on. Okay? So the official narrative here is even that black people started this. And by the way, apparently where there were supposed to be mass graves of black people in Tulsa, they did some investigations, and they're not there. It's just like the Holocaust. This is part of the common mythology of America about how racist it is. The commission gave overall estimates from 75 to 100 to 150 to 300 dead. Oh, oy vey. I'm sure it gets even worse and worse as time goes on. The official record has 36 dead. Okay? 26 black and 10 white. Oh, the worst event of all time. Now, they did essentially take some private aircraft and take out this black area known as Black Wall Street. But, guys, as I've shown, who fired first? Who instigated all of this? Anyway, that's just beside the point, really, because what I was talking about was Joe Biden's claim that a black man invented the light bulb. Now, he's probably referring to this guy, Lewis Howard Latimer, who had come up with a carbon filament for the light bulb, but he wasn't even the first guy to come up with the idea of a carbon filament for light bulbs. And it appears that Edison might not have even been the first person to really invent the light bulb as we know it, though he did really figure out how to get it into the hands of a lot of people, especially by way of his DC power supply. So Edison definitely did a lot of good work on the light bulb. There were some people beforehand and also along with him around the same time who were doing work on this. There was Sir Joseph Wilson Swan, and they both patented their light bulbs in 1880. They formed a joint company in 1883. But Edison had worked on thousands of different designs. And this Lewis Latimer, who we're just assuming that Biden was referencing, he was an inventor. And he came up with a carbon filament design for the Edison bulbs. And he sold it to the U.S. Electric Company in 1881. He got a patent for his process for manufacturing the filaments the next year. So let's give the guy his due. He was a legitimate inventor. You know, he did some good work with. But, you know, doesn't this really go against Biden's narrative and just the whole anti-white narrative that this country has always been so racist? If there was this partially black inventor, Lewis Latimer, who saw a good deal of success and also wealth in the United States, I thought it was just always so racist, even in the North. So anyway, Edison is definitely somebody to be credited for the light bulb. Tesla, his contributions just to the AC power cannot be forgotten. And he obviously told us to never trust a Jew, or actually told one of his secretaries that. But something we should all take to heart. And I want to just read through a couple comments here. Here's one from Steve. There have been many inventions attributed to blacks that are simply not true. I did some digging and came up with this. Filament for light bulb. Lewis Latimer invented the carbon filament in 1881 or 1882. Nope. English chemist / physicist Joseph Swan experimented with the carbon filament incandescent light bulb all the way back in 1860. And by 1878 had developed a better design which he patented in Britain. On the other side of the Atlantic, Thomas Edison developed a successful carbon filament bulb, receiving a patent for it in January 1880, before Lewis Latimer did any of his work on the carbon filament. But from 1880 onward, countless patents were issued for innovations in filament design and manufacture. Edison had over 50 of them. Neither of Latimer's two filament-related patents in 1881 and 1882 were among them, nor did they make the light bulb last longer, nor is there reason to believe they were adopted outside Hiram Maxim's company where Latimer worked at the time. He was not hired by Edison's company until 1884. So Latimer did actually get hired by Edison in 1884, primarily as a draftsman and an expert witness in patent litigations. Latimer also did come up with the first... He did not come up with the first screw socket for the light bulb or the first book on electric lighting. All these things are attributed to him, though. But Biden's going even further. He's going beyond the Wikipedia lies and saying, hey, Lewis Latimer actually invented the light bulb. Although we don't know if this is who he's even referencing, but it's got to be. somebody comments, even if it is true, you'll find that the proclaimed black inventor had European ancestry, which solely contributed to the intelligence. You could tell he's not a full African, for sure. Somebody says, Storm of Steel says, remember that one time Obama claimed his great uncle liberated Auschwitz? These people always seem to amaze us. Yes, that is quite incredible that Obama's uncle liberated Auschwitz, because that's impossible. Lewis Latimer had a white ancestor, Mitchell Latimer, so his intelligence can be attributed to his white ancestry. Yeah. The light bulb with carbon filament was actually invented first by the German Heinrich Goebel in the 1850s, but as is the case in many cases, the Anglo-Jews, Negroid or not, take credit for it. Nobody commented that. Guest says, they can't let the white man take credit for anything, can they? Whether it be in seven arts, medical science, or engineering, the contribution of Jews has always been greatly exaggerated. Just look at all their Nobel Prizes. I've no doubt Biden was told by his Jewish handlers to make this asinine statement. Jews are only good at extracting wealth and power from the ideas and hard work of others while portraying themselves as eternal victims. Yes, that is true. Let's now talk about this story of this Jewish professor of African history who had been pretending to be black pretty much her whole adult life, and now she's actually pretending to be white. This woman is essentially the new Rachel Dolezal, but while Rachel Dolezal actually might have been white, I don't know if she was part Jewish, this woman is actually just a Jewess. Which is why she probably was able to pass for being black, because she had the kinky female Jewfro, which she probably dyed even darker. And she's just a little swarthy. She's a swarthy Jewess, so she probably does have some African ancestry. Isn't that crazy, though? An African-American studies professor faked being black. Look at that. So Jessica A. Krug is an associate professor at George Washington, where she is a self-proclaimed historian of politics, ideas, and cultural practices in Africa and the African diaspora. So she came out in a Medium post on Thursday, apparently after having been outed by other people as not actually being black, and she said that although she has been publicly identifying a black woman for her whole adult life, she's actually white. However, that's obviously not the truth. This woman is a Jewess who is now pretending to be white, while she previously pretended to be black. She actually admits that she is Jewish, but somehow classifies herself as a white Jewish person. She writes, to an escalating degree over my adult life, I have eschewed my lived experience as a white Jewish child in suburban Kansas City under various assumed identities, within a blackness that I had no right to claim. First, North African blackness, then U.S.-rooted blackness, then Caribbean-rooted Bronx blackness. I have built my life on a violent anti-black lie, and I have lied in every breath I've taken. That's because you're a lying Jewess. You're a shapeshifter. She just needs to listen to that song, I'm Not White, I'm Jewish, so she stops calling herself white. So years ago, I wrote about this phenomenon of Jews seeking to distance themselves from their supposed whiteness after they kicked the white genocide agenda into high gear. That article is titled, After Inciting a Race War Against Whites, Jews Are Now Giving Up Their Whiteness. The race-changing professor is essentially just taking heat away from her tribe by identifying herself as a white woman now, rather than being seen as a lying Jewess. She writes, there's no parallel form of my adulthood connected to white people, or a white community, or an alternative white identity. I have lived this lie, fully, completely, with no exit plan or strategy. I have no identity outside of this. I have never developed one. Why can't this Jewess be black if she wants to? Gender is just this kind of fluid construct. Can't race be? I thought there was only one race, the human race. I thought race was just a social construct. Why can't this Jewess be black? She's a POC, right? Jews are part of the POC. Just let her in, guys. Let her be black. It does go to show that white privilege is a retarded concept, since so many people who are white or white Jewish, as this woman claims, want to identify as minorities in order to get ahead financially and socially in this country. Why would people do this if there was real white privilege? They wouldn't. Yep. Miss, never trust a Jew. They'll be lying to you. Speaking of Jews, I'm sure you might have caught this story this week. I published about it over on the Tribune, that the California bill by Senator Scott Wiener has passed that decriminalizes men having sex with boys. So a big thanks, Jews, for getting that passed through. It was Wiener working with some other Jewess, and they made it so that if a man has sex with a boy, as long as they're, I think, within 10 years of each other, that guy won't have to be on the sex offender registry as long as a judge approves it. And I'm sure the California judges will be all too happy to comply with that. Oh, but by the way, it's anti-Semitic and homophobic to oppose what they just did. Oh, wonderful. I don't know if you caught this, but the Washington Post says that Trump landed on planet Zog. I just thought that was crazy. They were saying that he's just out of touch with reality, like he's from a different planet, or, you know, he's just something like that. But he landed on planet Zog after he gave his speech in Kenosha, where he was defending Kyle Rittenhouse and condemning the rioters, who were mostly peaceful. Right? Well, how is it they framed it? Fiery, but mostly peaceful. As in the background, the city is burning to the ground. So much damage has been caused by BLM and these other groups. We're given so much money. Guys, so much money was given to these groups. And this was by politicians. This was by big corporations. And what did they go and do? They organized riots. They committed arson. They've committed murder. They've gone just apeshit, as the term is. So Trump now is trying to frame himself as being this defender of white Western civilization. And he's pretty much coming more out in the open now that the election's coming closer, trying to appeal to his base, while Biden has taken the polar opposite approach of just throwing white people under the bus every chance he can get. And I guess we'll see which strategy works. And there's all this talk that Biden will contest the election and they'll figure it out afterwards, even if Trump supposedly wins. They'll have a bunch of lawyers doing this and that, and they're claiming Trump is going to sandbag himself into in the White House and hole up in there, even if he loses. And we could be set for crazy times. It's like that book, The Last American President, that had basically Trump Tower being a scene of this big mob riot, right? And the one with the guy who wrote the time-traveling Baron Trump book and everything. Anyway, let's get to this story about how Biden's staffers actually put forth all this money to bail out a bunch of these people who are involved in riots. So this is coming from the Gateway Pundit. Again, I don't endorse this source. Criminal who was bailed out of jail by nonprofit funded by Biden's staffers violently assaults man, leaves him with traumatic brain injury and fractured skull. A 32-year-old accused felon committed another violent assault against an innocent man after being bailed out by the nonprofit funded by Biden's staffers. The Minnesota Freedom Fund received $35 million in donations during the George Floyd riots, and Biden's campaign staffers were among the people who made substantial donations. Lionel Timms was bailed out of jail in July thanks to the Minnesota Freedom Fund touted by Biden's running mate, Kamala Harris. Kamala Harris. Let's say her name right. You know, it's racist if you don't. Kamala. Okay. Timms was rearrested in August and faces one felony count of third-degree assault, causing substantial bodily harm after he repeatedly kicked a man in the head. The victim suffered a traumatic brain injury, a fractured skull, and brain bleed, all because Kamala Harris and Biden staffers helped bail Timms out of jail. Let me just guess. I don't know what the victim looked like. Let me just guess it's a white person. So Timms is currently in custody and is facing 5 years in prison and up to a $10,000 fine. Think of all the illegal aliens who are just let back out in the streets, ones who have committed felonies in the past. Oh, just let them back out. And then they go and commit more crimes. Of course this is going to happen. Hey, let's let all these violent criminals out of jail because of COVID. oh, they're out rioting in the streets? They get arrested? Well, let's let them out of jail again. Let's raise a bunch of money to get them out of jail. It's just crazy what is being done in this country. It is a color revolution. It's the black revolution, right? They've all these color revolutions all over Europe and elsewhere. This is just another one of the color revolutions. This is the black one. Let's take a look at this article here. Majority of American Jews signed full-page New York Times ad, unequivocally, Black Lives Matter. So this was from a little while ago, but I just caught wind of it. So, in a powerful message, a joint letter was signed by over 600 multiracial Jewish denominations. What does that even mean? Organizations and synagogues representing over half of all Jewish people in America. The text of the letter: we are Jewish organizations and synagogues from across the racial and political spectrum, from different streams of Judaism, whose members trace their lineage from countries around the world. Oh, so they're multiracial Jews. You know, you got some of the darker Jews, some of the lighter Ashkenazi Jews. You got the Sephardim, the Mizraim, right? We speak with one voice when we say unequivocally, Black Lives Matter. We support the black-led movement in this country. Oh, it's totally black-led. That is calling for accountability and transparency from the government and law enforcement. We know that freedom and safety for any of us depends on the freedom and safety of all of us. There are politicians and political movements in this country who build power by deliberately manufacturing fear to divide us against each other. Oh, Black Lives Matter doesn't divide anybody. And Jews don't divide anybody. That's what Jews do. It's the whole divide and rule. That's what they do. Jews are the wedge. They divide us apart. Wedge, W-E-J, right? It's just a reflection of Jew. If you read it from right to left, like Jews do. They are a wedge, and they create all these wedge issues to divide white people against each other. All too often, anti-Semitism is at the center of these manufactured divisions. There's a long history to these attempts. During the Southern Freedom Movement of the 1950s and 1960s, conspiracy theories were used by white supremacists attempting to delegitimize the extraordinary organizing of black activists. Billboards were erected smearing Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. as a communist. Completely true. Signs and flyers claiming that communist Jews were masterminding the civil rights movement were common. True. And pro-segregation organizations like the John Birch Society popularized these lies. That's actually kind of false. The JBS was kosher as hell, and they were trying to take heat away from the Jews. Black Lives Matter, the recent uprisings across the globe in the wake of the murders of Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd, Rayshard Brooks, and so many others, and the decades of political organizing across the country have led to this moment. Our movements led by and black and for black people. It's totally not led by us. Sure, we founded and led the NAACP, and we've been behind all this other stuff, but, you know, this is totally organic black lead, okay? Jewish corporations just giving them money. It's organic, okay? We're fertilizing the organic growth of the black flowers. We see through any attempt to suggest otherwise by pointing fingers, scapegoating, or using anti-Semitic dog whistles. As Jews, we know how dangerous this is. When politicians target Jewish people and blame us for problems, it leads directly to violence against us. What politicians target Jewish people and blame them? What politicians in America? In the past 100 years, one or two maybe have called out Jews, and they probably ended up dying. If JFK was killed for any reason, it was probably for getting a little too close to Jewish power. You know, Israel in the nukes or trying to disconnect the monetary system from the Federal Reserve, which is Jewish. That would be why he was killed. Of course, RFK Jr. is going to tell you it's the CIA, not mention that the CIA is a pretty much a Jewish organization from the get-go. But anyway. When black movements are undermined, it leads to more violence against black people, including black Jews. Anti-Semitism is part of the machinery those politicians use to blame black and brown people, people who are immigrants, people who are Muslim, and more. What politicians? Name them. Can you think of any politicians at all who have been calling out Jews? But whether they generate division and fear based on our religion, our skin color, or how long we've been here, their goal is to keep us from working together to win the things we all need to survive and thrive. Yeah, they're trying to build that big rainbow coalition, the Noahide Rainbow Coalition, to get all of the non-whites and all the white traitors all working together to bring down white supremacist America. When Jewish people join together with our neighbors across racial and religious differences, as we have in the past, we can protect each other and build the future of freedom and safety we all deserve. Jewish tradition teaches us that justice is not something that will be bestowed upon us. It is something that we need to pursue, and that the pursuit is itself sacred work. We're doing the Lord's work. Yahweh's work. We'll show up for each other every time one of us is targeted because of our differences, and reject any effort to use fear to divide us against each other. The Black Lives Matter movement is the current day civil rights movement in this country, and it is our best chance at equity and justice. By supporting this movement, we can build a country that fulfills the promise of freedom, unity, and safety for all of us, no exceptions. So, all these Jewish organizations get together and say, we support Black Lives Matter. They take out this big, massive New York Times ad. And then they say, to say that Jews are behind Black Lives Matter is an anti-Semitic dog whistle. It's a canard. It's going to cause violence and separatism and division. While they're literally saying, we're behind Black Lives Matter. You know, they're supporting it. It's a Jewish front. Black Lives Matter is a Jewish front. It's a Marxist organization. And even Trump is talking about how it's a Marxist organization because he's trying to throw white people, his base, a bone at this point. I thought he was going to try to lose the election. It looks like he might be trying to actually win the election by rallying his base yet again. And it's working. The latest thing that he's done is that he has gotten a bunch of people excited because he banned critical race theory from being taught at the federal level. I don't know if you guys know all about critical race theory. You should. I did a show about it in 2016. But it was being actually funded at the federal level, where they'd have these indoctrination seminars that employees would be forced to attend. And maybe it was just yesterday or the day before, Trump announced that he is going to be canceling all of this moving forward. Critical race theory, which is just basically anti-white indoctrination, is no longer going to be federally funded for employees. This all came after this journalist Chris Rufo was on with Tucker Carlson. He did a show detailing how the federal government is actually involved in this, and along with the military, in promoting critical race theory and spending a bunch of taxpayer dollars on this. But how did Trump not know about this previously? I mean, I know the person in charge of the executive branch is not going to know everything that's going on in the executive branch, but still, do you think he didn't know anything about the anti-whiteness that was so prevalent? Nobody had brought this to his attention? I guess he's not going to learn about something that's going on in his own executive branch until it's brought up on Tucker Carlson. So this Christopher Rufo had called on President Trump to do something about this, and 3 days later, he actually did, and this memo was sent out from the Executive Office of the President, signed by Russell Voigt, kind of. It's funny, his signature looks like Runt, R-U-N-T, the way that he signs it. And anyway, Trump tweets out, Trump orders purge of critical race theory from federal agencies, which is a Breitbart article. He says, this is a sickness that cannot be allowed to continue. Please report any sightings so we can quickly extinguish. It's got himself below these Mount Rushmore carvings. So patriotic, so American. He's saluting. And then in another tweet, or he retweets the Columbia Bugle, They say, sorry, liberals, How to Be Anti-White 101 is permanently canceled. So people are super excited about this. So in both photos, he's given this salute. And so what I think is taking place here is he's trying to get back some support that he might have lost after this whole scandal about him supposedly saying that he wasn't going to honor dead veterans, you know, or dead soldiers because they were losers and all this other stuff. He likes winners. So yeah, that whole scandal was coming out, and just right afterwards, oh, I'm banning critical race theory. All this anti-whiteness is got to go. And so this is kind of rallying his base pretty well. I from what I'm seeing, you know, it's working. The memo states, it has come to the president's attention that executive branch agencies have spent millions of taxpayer dollars to date training government workers to believe divisive anti-American propaganda. Why don't you just talk about who's behind critical race theory? And it's not just the black guys. You got to trace it back a little bit further. But hey, guys, at least Based Glenn Beck is on board. Based Beck, he tweets out yet another very important difference between real Donald Trump, that's his handle, and Beijing Biden. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. President, for understanding the destructive power of critical race theory. It's another poison from the demonic mind of Karl Marx. School's next? Yeah, why isn't Trump moving beyond this? Critical race theory is everywhere. It's not just in the federal government. Nobody is really standing up for white people. This is the only person who is giving white people any hope. And it's all by design. The real danger, I think, is white people thinking that the federal government actually has their interests at heart. And that's what this is doing. When, in fact, the federal government is yet another organization amongst many, but a very powerful one, that is just enacting the Jew-orchestrated white genocide agenda. So when are they going to cancel all the other anti-white programs that are part of the United States government? When are they going to do anything about that? This is a public relations move, and it's very effective. I give the sick man his due. I'll give Ghislaine Maxwell's buddy, Jeffrey Epstein's buddy here, his due. This was a good move. But he was kind of backed into a corner, forced to do this. Because a lot of people watch Tucker Carlson, and when Chris Rufo brings up what's going on at the federal level, if Trump didn't respond, it would look terrible. So I think his hand was actually forced here. I don't think he really cares about white people whatsoever. Oh, he's just a patriotic man. Bunch of BS. Miss, never trust a politician. How about that one? Or how about this? Never trust a health official, a chief health, a medical expert, or anything like that. Canada's chief medical officer recently came out and says that you should wear a mask while having sex. Yeah, this thing, this doctor, Dr. Tam, Dr. Teresa Tam, it looks like a tranny. I'm pretty sure it's a tranny. That's just my expert opinion, though. I can't be for certain, but terrible thing. Born in Hong Kong, by the way, just another communist agent working to destroy white civilization. She has come out and said that, you know, semen doesn't really spread the coronavirus. From what we understand, semen and other sexual fluids, vaginal fluids, they're not going to transmit COVID-19. So having sex with people is kosher. It's cool. Don't worry about that. It's just, you got to watch out for symptoms of COVID. You know, if you got like a little fever or anything, then you shouldn't. Also, you know, you've got to not kiss. No kissing, no intimacy involved at that level. But you could use the glory hole. Canada also came out and said you can use glory holes. Those are completely fine, completely kosher. But if you're going to have sex without a glory hole, you better put on a mask, okay? She actually says here, like other activities during COVID-19 that involve physical closeness, there are some things you can do to minimize the risk of getting infected and spreading the virus. Skip kissing. Avoid face-to-face closeness. So, you know, not some of those types of positions where you're actually facing each other. Probably one of the ones where you face away from each other. That's the only thing you should be doing. Yep, and she says, wear a mask that covers your mouth and nose. Oh, that's so sexy. That's so hot. Yes, masked sex from Canada's chief medical officer. And monitor yourself and your partner for symptoms ahead of any sexual activity. How about that? And then, let's take a look at what the BBC's putting out. New sex advice includes avoid kissing, wearing a face covering, choosing positions that aren't face-to-face during sex. So guys, is this just, you know, they came to the same conclusion? No, this is an agenda being put forth. Canada and Britain are very closely connected, of course, but they're coming out with the same exact advice. And the article from the BBC is, no face-to-face sex to stay COVID safe, charity says. Oh, what a charity. What a brave new world we're in. So sick. I don't think even Orwell could have imagined this world that we're entering here. The new Jew normal. Oh, the Jew normal is so disgusting. I hate it. I want to do everything I can to make sure that this does not stick. The new normal cannot continue. So I hope each one of you out there does whatever you can to help us bring a swift end to it. Hope you got something out of this broadcast here tonight. Consider supporting the network if you can. Check out heathenherbs.com, and I'll be back with you all again quite soon. Take care.
Finally, AR-500 steel core body armor that comfortably conforms to the chest and torso. Unique design distributes weight, feeling lighter, increases mobility, and lessens fatigue. Introducing the Combat Quad Bend CQB, a revolutionary plate forming process that caters to the end user. The CQB is an industry game changer, a must-have for the ladies. Available now, only at katiearmor.com, CATIarmor.com. Come and take it.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Thanks for listening to Project Schoolyard Volume 2. For more information about the project, as well as lyrics to the songs on this CD, please visit www.tightrope.cc. You can also find jokes, news articles, a photo gallery, free CD downloads, and a secure online shopping cart. We carry a full line of flags, t-shirts, CDs, books, stickers, and other products of interest to racially conscious white people. Please visit www.tightrope.cc.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Are you prepared to bug out? Infidel Body Armor and an Army Ranger have produced a high-speed DVD and book to show you how to drive in combat, patrol, and how to survive in combat. Skills you'll need when it hits the fan. Go to DrivenDVD.com. DrivenDVD.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Resolutionrdo.com.